I think that if a man, let's say a guy from the farm, or a girl, there was a recent woman from the farm, chairman, if she had not put on a very good show.
Oh, stopped. Okay.
If she had not put on a very good show, DuPont would have been on her, and they would have, it would have been tough on her advancement. But she did. She put on a wonderful show. And so,
and over time, a huge amount has come to depend upon the internal traditions of particular conferences.
Yeah.
From the board level, could you point to sort of the really central conferences, the great conferences, the important, and say, you know, I don't know, physical organic is always a star.
Anything having to do with organic chemistry, because there are so darn many organic chemists, is now here we go.
Actually, if you go, let's here see. You see.
Yeah, that's. And these things come and go. They vary depending on years. Nanostructure fabrication, chemically and chemical, that is something which in the past few years has become hot, because people are interested in making smaller, smaller devices. Nonlinear optics and lasers is something, because that's an area of being used. Organic reactions and processes always has a good sized crew, because lots of chemistry is organic. Physical organic, and they have a lot of them. Well, if you look at all these, stereochemistry has a good one. Biology and chemistry of tetrapyrroles. That wouldn't be very interesting to chemists, and I have never been to one of those, so I don't know how many biologists come, but that is a focus which is outside of my expertise.
I'm wondering about the sort of the internal ecology of this thing. If you think, by way of analogy, with the university system,
mm-hmm.
3,000 colleges,
mm-hmm.
but gee, you better worry about the health of Harvard, the health of Michigan, mm-hmm. and Colby College. Well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you sort of, Gordon, conference-wise, is there any analogy?
Harvard College?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Are there
I've
a certain
never been tried to
call
I can tell
conferences
you,
that really...
I think the most important one these days, polymers has always been very big. Coatings and films. I think drug carriers in medicine and biology is always a big one. And the fiber science area is important, because that's very important to the industry. I guess that, where's the polymers? Natural products is always a big one. Organic reactions is a big one. Physical organic. Thin films have become quite important in recent years because it covers crystal growth. And there's two conferences, and crystal growth is the name of the game now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
An awful lot of science.
Yes.
I don't know about these things like staphylococcal diseases. I don't think that is... That would have a limited group of people. I think theoretical biology and biomathematics has a very limited attendance. But what do they call it? Polymers? They don't have that down here as a...
Yeah, the organization in that booklet's a little funny.
Yes.
I think that's in there.
But the one, there is a conference that really, used to be called Polymers. They may have given the fancier name now. But that would be chemistry of olefins from petroleum. That would cover some of the polymer work.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the inorganic one has had its ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
They had two gals, ran it in successive years. One of them was from Michigan State at the time she was elected, and the other one was from DuPont. And both of these gals developed programs which they had turned away crowds,
mm-hmm.
had turned away 40 or 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't take them.
There is a sort of, it's 100 plus or minus, is
yeah,
kind of
how right.
everything works.
That's right. And
mm-hmm.
if you, 130 they'll take, about 120, 130.
And if a conference only draws 80, it becomes a candidate for scrutiny.
That's right. They watch it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Can we talk about this, the scheduling and selection committee and this territory of defining the boundaries and so on? I mean, was that a big when you were on the board and the board chair? Was that a big subject of discussion?
The selection and scheduling committee is a very important committee which operates almost independently from the board. The board is over them in the normal sense, but the board is smart enough to know that they've selected on there people who are experts in various phases of the disciplines that are being reviewed. There's some biology people, there's some organic chemists, there's some inorganic chemists, there's some physical chemists, and it's a fairly big committee. And they meet separately, and they will make recommendations to the board. The board can always overrule them. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
They're smart enough not to.
And so they control both they're the quality and subject.
That's right. And they use, and I can tell you what their tools are. They study these reports that people turn in after a conference in detail. If you are on the scheduling committee and you get a group of reports saying these were a bunch of arrogant self-centered academics, we didn't get anything out of it, schedule next year.
What if they get reports that these are a bunch of self-serving industrialists?
They wouldn't get that. They wouldn't. If they got the thing and it was clear that what they had been doing was self-serving only, and if they were carrying their industrial problem of lack of communication into the conference, they wouldn't get back either, but they would try to get some other industrial people the next year. They want industry, but not at any price.
So, Dr. Parry, you've been around, you know a thing or two. I'm a new assistant professor here at Utah. I'd really love to end up as you did, as chair of the Gordon Research Conferences. What set of moves do you recommend I make to get me there?
First thing you do is go.
Okay, I'll do that. Then what?
The first thing you do is go. And you talk to people about research that you are doing and have done. You publish on that research and have to get things that will attract people. I can tell you where, I can give you the exact point at which I became a candidate, I guess, for moving ahead in the Gordon Conferences. I had, at one of these Gordon Conferences, one of the guys that had confronted me and been the nastiest in my initial baptism by fire, still was, I had shown really that the model he had for this compound was wrong and that ours was right. We didn't quite have the X-ray diffraction result at that time, but we were getting it, and we had an X-ray diffraction result on the auxiliary compound that was like it. And I was asked by Herb Brown to give a talk at a symposium that he had organized in the San Francisco meeting many years ago. And this guy, and the Inorganic Division had a practice of having a speaker and a commenter on a speaker who would argue with him, who would try to shoot him down. And the commenter on my talk, which I heard asked me to do my talk, commenter was the same fellow that had given all the trouble at the conferences and even had blocked some publication of my papers for months and had been just generally obnoxious to me. And when the word got out that I was going to talk and he was going to be the commenter, people love that. They want to see a fight. And they want to see somebody get shot down. And I went to give my talk, and it was in a big hall in San Francisco. But I couldn't get in the place 10 minutes before the talk. It was packed. And I finally struggled to get in. And I gave my talk, and this was the place where I had all the data that I needed, and I had the answers. And
my commenter got up afterwards, and he said, well, he couldn't believe this, he couldn't believe that. And H.I. Schlesinger was in the audience. Did you ever meet him?
No.
He was from the University of Chicago, and he was one of the best inorganic chemists that ever happened around. He was the one that started, picked up Stock's work on boron hydride, mm-hmm. and he and his colleagues made sodium boron hydride and all of these things, and they did wonderful things. And my antagonist and I exchanged comments and failed insults for a period. Then Schlesinger stood up and he said he would like to speak. Well, he was given the floor, and I was trembling in my boots, because here was a man who was respected throughout the world, and I didn't know what he was going to do. I was worried. And he walked up. It took him a long time, because he was very old and he had to fight his way through lots of people. But he came up and he got about 4 feet from me, and he stuck out his hand and he said, congratulations, that is beautiful work. You are right. After that, people listened. If I had not been able to convince people at that point, I would have been through. I can give you another example. Fred Basolo and Ralph Pearson got in a squabble with two very famous English chemists. And these people were extremely nice, extremely good people, brilliant, but they were wrong. And they got into this, scientific controversy. And they got into a situation like that in the meeting.
What did it revolve around?
Well, it evolved around a point that they said that a mechanism went by one route, and the English people said no, it went by a completely different route.
Okay.
And mechanisms are hard to prove or disprove. But these guys had exchanged veiled niceties in the literature for some time. Finally, they were confronting each other at a conference in England. And Basolo and Pearson had a definitive answer, which proved that the English thing was wrong. And these were the top of it. Ingold and von Nyholm. Mm. And those names mean things to you guys.
Yes.
And they had shown that their work, I don't know whether you better put that in there, I just hid the names of them, but they were very nice about the thing later. They backed off and said they congratulated them. But this was a similar speech. And if Basolo and Pearson had been wrong, their career would have taken a sudden dive.
These cases that you're describing,
mm-hmm.
These came before being asked to be chair of a board?
No, these came after I was asked. Well, wait a minute. No, this did come before.
Okay.
This did come before. It was in 58, and I was chair in 63.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I should be a clear star in my field, and so then I'll be... And I go
you
to the
You better
conferences
be right.
And I
saying.
Better be right. And then I'll become a chair of a conference, and then I'll get on the council. But how am I going to get to be chair of the board?
Well, I guess you just have to call on your colleagues on the board thinking that you know what you're doing, even if you don't.
It's the universal principle.
You get up to a level of incompetence.
Yes. Because one of the things about the conference is it's had a pretty stellar list of board chairs.
Yeah, it has. There are a lot of very fine people there. These are people that...
Some of the industries are not necessarily as well known, but
they're just as good, though.
Yeah.
I think that Bob Cairns, Batchelder, Brown, Beakey, Kulpik, John McCullough. These are people with credentials. Just as good as any of the academic people.
Yeah.
Every one of them. Dave McCall, Jaborski.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, Kathy Taylor, DeSalvo.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that would stand up in any comparison with any of the industry, the academic people.
It's striking to me that in the looking back at some of the board minutes that you hit a point in the 60s where there's a sense, okay, people in the scientific community know who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to be known beyond that? Do we want the general public to know who we are?
You see, that was... Exactly, you're perceptive to see that actually, because that was the time. 68 was the time when this controversy, well, it was just before that, it was in 63 when the controversy about do we expand or not came forth.
Mm-hmm.
And sides were taken.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the 60s, it was 63.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't resolved until the early 70s. In the 70s, it was whole hog, full speed ahead. We want to get other people involved, and we want to do this.
Why did it change? What, I mean?
We got a new director.
Yeah, okay.
And
Parks was fairly comfortable with the size of thing he had?
Yeah. Well... I don't know. I didn't know Parks that well that I could say he was comfortable. But what I do think, I told you this yesterday, that I can't be sure, but I think that Parks did not want to give up his element of control,
mm-hmm.
which was raising money for the industry. Now, that may be an unfair thing to say. I can't say, but to me, that was the basis for him not wanting to expand. Because
mm-hmm.
that would take the power of the operation from his hands and distribute it to a bunch of chairmen that he didn't have the ability to control as much as he wanted.
Which is essentially what Cruikshank did.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. So where did you side on the issue in terms of expansion, but also in terms of more public awareness and a PR campaign as it's talked about?
Well, I've always felt that a PR campaign for science is crucial. We're suffering very, very much from the fact that people don't have the foggiest idea what we do and what our motives are. They think we're out there trying to poison them. And I think we've sort of put that one to rest, but there's a lot of other things that they're afraid of radiation now and all that kind of thing. That
Alec Jordan was, I guess he was in there when you arrived on the ball.
Yeah.
And where he came from, one of the industrial board.
I don't know where he was from, but he had a consulting firm. That's how I knew of him. He had a consulting firm, and he was the public relations man for the board, for the conferences. Yeah.
And what was your view of that? I mean, that disappeared at some stage, I think.
Well, I guess that centered in part in my view of Alec. The trouble with Alec was, I think that he was a very good friend of George Parks, and his position on an issue was pretty closely tied to George's, as much as I could see, up until the time that George had been convicted. Then Alec called me and he wanted me to fire Parks, and I had to tell him, I don't think I have the power, and if I do, I'm not going to use it. I said, I think that this is a matter for the entire structure of the Gordon Conference. We're going to approach this step by step through the organization and the rules of the conference and the government. And we're going to not jump out in front and fire them. Well, Alec wasn't too happy with that position. He argued with me quite vigorously that I had a responsibility to the people and to science to get rid of him. It was a completely different speech than I'd heard earlier. But I think what we did was right. Because I didn't have to fire Parks and face him and have him feel that I had done this to him. The thing that made it really seem appropriate to everybody was when I had on one side of me Batch Batchelder, who was respected throughout the whole country, and Joe Kopic on the other, who was also respected through the whole industrial area. And they were talking to George. I said, they can talk first. And nobody could say that we had railroaded him, that we hadn't been fair, that we hadn't been doing the best thing that was best for the conferences. But if I had tried to move early in the game, I could have triggered a fight, which would have been nasty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But these guys, I have tremendous respect for those two men, and they went in with me, confronted George. He was telling Alex couldn't do it, he didn't know how to do it, tore to pieces and so on. And I still remember Batch. He said, George, he could call him George, I was calling him Dr. Parks. George, this is not a matter of whether Alex can do it or not. That's our problem. The thing is, you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, he would approach things in that way. They were just, he didn't yell at people or jump up and down. He would make statements like that, which were obvious, but which meant a hell of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And end of the conversation. I had, there were a group of people that I think saved the conferences. Those two were two of them that were the highest. in that, I thought that I had to appoint a committee of people to review the, that's in those minutes, to review the functioning of the conferences at that point. And that committee, I had to be on it according to the board, but it included Batchelder, Kropik, Herb Gutowski, Herb Carter, and John McCullough.
Mm-hmm.
That committee, the work of those guys, saved the place.
Mm-hmm.
And McCullough and Gutowski were studying all the transactions that had been done, and they would come back and tell us what needed to be fixed. And I think those names were the guys that saved the thing and kept us from going downhill.
When you say the transactions, are you looking both at the financial transactions and at
everything,
how the conferences really operated?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Money was a part of it, but it wasn't the whole thing. You know, the way you treat your chairman and how you, what kinds of freedom and what kind of support you give them and things like that.
Would you have, do you think there might be correspondence or drafts or so on that might be in the archive here that relate to that?
I don't know. I think that I wrote a lot of letters, and I didn't ever expect to see you guys here. And the university came over and asked me if they could have my papers. And I said, God, I'm glad to get them out. I had them downstairs in a little closet. I gave them to them, boxes of them. And they say that they put them in a file. I don't know where. I could find out about that.
Yeah, I think we have to look into that, because the Gordon Conference archives themselves are disappointingly blank on exactly
in
these
fact,
sorts
I'm
of
In fact, I'm very
territories.
Much disappointed in the whole thing, because they're not accurate.
Not only non-existent, but wrong.
Yeah.
This is the double whammy, yeah.
Yeah, they're wrong. Yeah. There's a lot of things in there that are